This here podcast contains strong language and is not suitable for young listeners, workplace environments, or people of delicate constitution.
Why do we play games?
To have fun, right?
You're listening to FatCast. We've upped our game. Up yours.
Right, welcome to the FatCast, episode 3. I'm Matt Loader, and I have no problem popping my peas.
And I'm Josh Look, and I move away from the mic when I breathe in. We're coming at you from the Fat Cave, where we're going to talk about some games, some movies, some comics, whatever else we think is fucking awesome. So, today we're going to be talking about Battleship Galaxies, Junta. Is that how you say it, Matt? You say Junta?
The Junta dice game.
Yeah, how much of an H do you put on Junta?
Mostly
I make
like,
a question when
it's
I say
much all H.
Junta?
All H.
Viva el Presidente. That's the full name of the game. Thunderstone Dragonspire. Bastion. Space Marine. Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Conan. We're going to talk about some new Fantasy Flight announcements, too. We want to talk about Rex and the Star Wars license that they've acquired. Also on today's show, we're going to have Kurt and Justin from Smirk and Dagger Games. Cool guys.
You're really blowing our spot up here, so we actually have to do a good job of talking about all this stuff now that you...
We're going to talk about this stuff.
You've set us off here, so...
You know, we're going to talk about this stuff.
No editing.
We're going to talk about this stuff. First game I want to talk about today is Battleship Galaxies. Not to bullshit you, it's fucking terrible. I really do think that this is like this is no, I'm serious. This is the like the most disappointing game that I've bought all year and probably since I bought Age of Conan, you know, which I even like and it's still disappointing. But this game is really just there's no point to owning this game. You know, like you might say to yourself, "Oh, well, this is the guys that did HeroScape. I kind of want to jump into this because this might be worth something down the road." No, no, just buy fucking HeroScape. All right. HeroScape is just like it's worth it. And this game, like you're paying $64 for potential.
$64, not $65 though.
Yeah, $64.99, whatever. It's $65. It's too much, right? So you get five scenarios, one of them blows, two of them are all right, and the other two am I doing my math right?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. We're good there.
Yeah, I haven't had too much tequila. So we you get two scenarios worth playing because the other two are for 3 to 4 people and the game is like, you know, like my fingernails grow at a faster rate of speed than those games move. So yeah, you're paying a lot of money for some potential. That's even if they put out expansions.
Well, I mean, I think people too, I've seen sort of on the internets and stuff, some people that were really, really gung ho about it.
Yep.
When it first dropped.
Yeah.
Played it a bunch, really loved it, are over
and
it,
now
are completely over it.
Completely over it, yeah.
And then, you know, there are certainly a lot of people that... I mean, I don't think there are very many people that are right now really stoked on it.
Unless you just bought it and it's your first game.
I mean, there were a lot of people that... there were a lot of people...
If it's the first game you ever bought, you're like, wow, this is way better than Risk.
Yeah. Well, is it?
No, it isn't. That's the thing. That's the sad truth is that it's... It's not better than any. I'd rather play the original Battleship, I think. You know? Well, I have electronic Star Wars Battleship.
Talking
and that's
electronic,
badass.
I mean, it's pretty sweet.
It's awesome, dude. It makes a fuck ton of noise, so I'm all about it.
Yeah,
it
sounds good.
So basically, cut to the chase. Either man up and just buy HeroScape and don't be a bad parent and play it with your kid, or buy Summoner Wars, because that is another terrific tactical game that's of the same level of complexity. And
we should explain why we're saying these particular games, because they have nothing to do with outer space.
No.
The same designers.
Same designers, exactly.
You know, same design space, I think.
Yep. I would argue they fit the same niche.
Yeah,
A light tactical game. You know, HeroScape is best in class. One would argue, well, it takes too long to set up, whereas Battleship doesn't. Well, Battleship takes longer to play, so deal with that. While Summoner Wars,
those are probably,
just shuffle your deck and you're there.
Those are probably the same dudes that don't know what foreplay is. So,
whoa,
you know,
yikes.
Hey,
man, you gotta fucking
listen,
get on that shit.
Listen, you gotta do the time early on to have the most enjoyable experience.
Yeah, right.
I mean, listen.
Yep.
Let's not fuck around here, you know? Those are the guys that show up with, like, unpainted Warhammer armies. and half of them are proxies, and they're like, this is going to be cool, right?
Yep.
Come on, man.
Yeah.
You got to get serious.
Yep. So, yeah, don't buy it. It's too much money for potential. Just buy Summoner Wars. It's fucking awesome.
Sounds good.
Yep.
Moving on.
Moving on. So we've both been playing a good one.
Yeah, the Junta Viva El Presidente.
Yep, is, from Z-Man Games.
Yeah, Zev put it out. It's it was originally put out in Europe. It's basically takes what Junta, the original Junta is, and distills it down into a quick dice game.
Yeah.
Basically, it takes the game that went on above the table and sort of retains that, and then you know makes it mechanically much simpler, so you don't have to spend all those hours and all the rule, you know, all this sort of extra weight to it. You're basically just rolling dice and fucking each other constantly is really what it is.
Yep.
It's nasty. It's mean. It's everything I like in a game.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's pretty well produced.
Yeah,
I like
really
the components. Everybody gets a cool. Yeah, everyone gets a little board in front of them that has their estate. And it's really funny as you play the game and you realize what's on your estate when you start.
Yeah.
Like, the whole object of the game is to grow your estate and put new things on your estate. And, like, you'll put, like, a swimming pool on there. And, like, when you start to look at the game, it's like, oh, I have a little kiddie pool when I start the game, and now I build this big swimming pool. It's a funny little thing. But you get these cool little buses.
I think they're actually, like, military trucks.
Yeah, they're military trucks,
buses,
right.
I'm
well,
sure
they
not.
Hide your militia
in
there. Like, the whole game is, like, this whole, like, set your dice to a certain player's number, because everyone has
you're
a number.
Attack and this and that, yeah.
And then you reveal who's in the bus and who's attacking who. So it's kind of cool. And then, of course, the sunglasses.
Yeah.
Which everybody...
Crucial component.
...loves. Yeah, you get the sunglasses if you're the president. So...
You mean El Presidente.
El Presidente, yeah.
But no, I mean, it's definitely, I mean, if you like fuck you games, it's great.
Yeah,
it's great.
Hardly any rules there.
Very easy to explain.
Yep.
Plays quick.
Yep.
It's,
Play with the advanced rules, though. There's like, there are like two more rules. There's like two more
rules.
Yeah. Just use them.
No, I'm pretty sure. I didn't even know there were easy rules, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, just use them.
I don't remember. But yeah, so, that's basically, it's short review. Pick it up. Check it out. It's great.
Yeah, I like it. Another great game that I just picked up is Thunderstone Dragonspire.
It's a standalone.
It's a standalone expansion.
It's an expansion, but it's standalone, so you can play just that.
Yes, which is great. I've never played Thunderstone, so...
Works out well because I've never played the
You've played everything but Dragonspire, and I've played just Dragonspire, so...
Yes.
So
collectively, we might be able to have a really
comprehensive review of what Thunderstone's all about at the current situation.
We're gonna
hold on
a sec. We're gonna pull little stations from Bill and Ted's little move here, and we're gonna jump together and turn into one mega reviewer.
Yeah, or maybe like Voltron.
Yeah,
Voltron
kind of had more than two parts, and I think Stations is cooler.
You know, I mean, Stations.
I'm gonna
go
on record as saying I like Bill and Ted better than Voltron.
Stations.
Bill and Ted has aged better than Voltron.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I really don't know anything about what Thunderstone has been about. I've kind of avoided it. I know that it's a deck builder, and it was kind of the first deck builder with a purpose, as they like to say,
at AEG. I think it was basically one of the first deck builders.
It might have been the second one after Dominion,
Arctic Scavengers
yeah.
After Dominion, but I think this was the
Yeah.
This was a very, very early deck builder, which,
yep.
Very early. I mean, it was like, whoa,
two years ago.
Jesus.
Yeah. So it's pretty much the same thing Thunderstone's always been, to my understanding, is that, you're building some fantasy characters in your deck. You start with the basics, and then you're going into a dungeon and killing stuff, and... these cards seem really interesting to me. I've heard that the earlier versions, the cards are a little bit less interesting. The game's a little bit less interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where you got to walk before you can run, I think, to a degree. I guess you're jumping in late and it's fine, so it's not necessarily a true, true thing. But, I definitely think that, it's something like, we talk about Cutthroat with Kurt, it's... you can't, that's gone through a number of expansions, and you start out and you're like, all right, these are the sort of basic powers. And then the more you play a bunch and you see stuff and you think of different ideas and you think of different ways to approach it and more complex interactions and, different stretching the system, so to speak.
Right.
What can we do to really stretch this system?
Yeah.
And so, I think expansions, I think that's sort of the appropriate arc for expansions is to really, you know, or an expansion like that, where you, you know, where you're sort of really stretching what the system can do, doing more interesting stuff. I mean, if the expansion is just more stuff with different stats, like that's kind of bullshit.
That's not fun.
It should be doing stuff that's really like, here's some new ways to think about this system and
I don't know what kind of player interaction is in the game before, because I mean, there's still minimal player interaction as of now.
It's pretty minimal.
Yeah. There's a few cards now.
There's a few heroes that are pretty fuck-you-ish. Yeah, there was always
that, like,
always
when you
been
put the thief
like that,
out,
yeah.
then everybody needs to reveal they need to discard a weapon from their hand or reveal that they have no weapons. There's some
that
cool
level of
things
stuff
there.
Has always sort of been there. I mean, there's always been some characters where you could make people discard this or
some
that,
of the new traps affect everybody. There's like one new set of traps called draconic traps. They're fucking nasty.
Isn't it draconic?
Draconic.
I don't know.
I've heard draconic when I played.
Draconic sounds really.
I heard draconic when I played Baldur's Gate. So
yeah, but they're like, I don't know, they're from
Baldur's Gate
Europe
taught me all the life lessons.
Yeah, isn't Troika from Eastern Europe?
It's not Troika, that's BioWare. They're from Canada.
Is it?
You're right, so what the fuck
either,
do they know?
Either way.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Either way.
He says, the dude from BioWare, like, that does all the talking for them, I heard him say melee. He says, like, melee.
Yeah.
A melee attack. If you're a two-handed rogue, you want to get behind the back to do a melee attack. So,
yeah, that's bullshit.
Back on track.
So back to Thunderstone. Back to Thunderstone. AEG, are they Canadian? No.
I don't think so.
I don't know.
That other dude was like from Louisiana.
Maybe
that we met
from
down
Canada
south.
Canada is involved.
Nice use of Canada.
Yeah. You know what? It's 9/11. Fuck you if you're not from America.
Yeah, right.
Saying it. Yeah. Done.
So, yeah, back to Thunderstone.
Thunderstone, excellent game.
Yeah.
Excellent game.
So, I can't speak for the whole series, but just from Dragonspire, I've played it a shit ton in a very short amount of time, and I'm still loving it. My wife loves it. And that's the thing, is that it's a deck builder that plays really well with two people. It's a great two-player game. And another, it's a great three-player game, which, for me anyway, seems to be a problem. I seem to have a hard time finding good three-player games. Like, it's always, like, two or four or five. Like, very little in between.
There's a lot of stuff that plays three but doesn't play near as well, and you don't want to play it with
Meanwhile,
three.
This you would not want to play with five. It plays up to five, four it slowed down,
and
five
well, I mean, it's
you
like Runebound. Runebound is essentially a two, maybe three-player game.
I just wouldn't play Runebound.
Well, but the point stands that...
I'd rather take a nap. Than play Runebound.
Yeah.
So,
I enjoy two-player Runebound.
Oh, yeah. I like playing Runebound by myself, but, I mean... Runebound.
Downtime's pretty killer. So, moving on a little bit here. Let's move into the digital realm.
Yeah.
So, it's a little bit late, but I've been playing a lot of Bastion for the Xbox Live Arcade.
Late? I haven't even played it yet.
Well, I mean, it came out on XBLA like a month ago. It just came out on Steam, though, right?
Right, yeah, Steam, that's how I game.
But yeah, it's fucking awesome. It's just a great... I'm surprised a lot of people sort of compared it to like a classic era Legend of Zelda game.
That sounds awesome enough.
That's not at all, though, what I feel like is going on. Hmm. I mean, it's, you know, it's sort of that sort of bird's eye view. There's a term for it, and I can't think of what it is.
Isometric?
Yeah, whatever.
That's what it is.
Okay, so
saying.
So there's that, and you're basically. I mean, you're running around, you're killing stuff. You know, so it's definitely like active time.
Yeah, it's active time.
You're not. You don't have stats, but you can get different weapons and different skills and different little tonics that you get that give you different abilities. Like,
would you say
more
like Secret of Mana?
No, less RPG-ish than Secret of Mana.
Really?
Secret of Mana is basically like some of the newer Secret of Mana games.
Yeah,
where there's you don't really look at stats. But you have kind of different weapons that do different stuff.
Okay.
And you know, like one of the, you know, I think the last one I played was on DS, you know, like Children of Mana or something. It was fun. I mean,
yeah.
It's basically you run around, you beat stuff up.
Yep.
You get better stuff that lets you upgrade the weapons to do, you know, there's different, you can upgrade the weapons in two different sides you can upgrade them on, you know, if you want more attack power or better speed or, you know, there's some ranged, you have a ranged weapon, you have a melee weapon, you can have two melee, two ranged, you kind of mix it up. There's some versatile weapons and stuff. I mean, you're building up this kind of... You can play it in a variety of different ways.
Right.
And different levels, sort of. Because it's definitely... There's sort of like a level sort of thing to it. So different zones or levels or whatever you want to call it.
So it's definitely a good balance between like some RPG conventions and then like some more just like...
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's very like... it's heavy on the action,
yeah,
and lighter on the RPG, but it's definitely there.
Yeah,
I mean, you're definitely doing it. By RPG, I mean, I guess it's sort of like RPG has become such a bullshit term now. If RPG has to do with like statting your dude up as opposed to like actually role playing, telling a story.
Yeah, it's real fun seeing what Steam calls RPG.
Yeah,
it, you know, I'm sorry, but Dawn of War 2 is not really.
Yeah.
RPG has elements, but I mean
the thing that really is awesome is it has a narrator. And so while you're doing stuff, like the first like minute of the game, you're just like I just couldn't stop smiling.
Because of the narrator?
The narrator. So really? When you're doing stuff,
yeah.
You know, obviously it would get old if it's like the entire game all the time. But it's throughout the game.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, there's a narrator and he has right. this great like deep voice and he's like, and then you stab this bear. You know, and he's like, he narrates what you're doing and it's like, it's awesome. He's like that dude with the big mustache from Big Lebowski.
Yes.
You know, the cowboy, whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, sounds like that kind of dude. Sam
nice.
Elliott? Is that
Sam Elliott, yeah.
Sounds like that dude, right?
Yep.
And he's kind of sounds like that, and he's kind of like all, you know, kind of like in this kind of like Western-y kind of thing. This neo-Western thing kind of going on.
Yeah, I love that guy.
And the game has, because the soundtrack and everything kind of has this sort of neo-Western feel.
Cool.
And you're just like, and he has all these sort of like, you know, Old West style like one-liners and ways of saying stuff like, you know, that'll teach him not to come back again. You know, like that kind of stuff. You know, and it's like while you're playing this sort of like action game, like this dude is like narrating what you're doing.
Yeah.
And it's really fucking cool. And it's
nice.
A really like sort of simple idea that just in execution really makes the gameplay experience really, really enjoyable.
Mm.
And definitely adds a lot to what would otherwise be still a really solid game. But this definitely, I think, takes it to the next level of really changing the experience.
Right.
So,
and it's a downloadable game.
Downloadable game. I think it was $10.
It's $14.99 on Steam.
Maybe it was, I don't know.
But thanks. I'm $14.99 poor now.
It's really fucking good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely
I'm
really
not going to regret
whatever,
it.
Whatever, it's on
that.
Steam. Wait till next week and it'll be
it'll
2 cents.
It'll be on sale. Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be a quarter.
Christmas time or something.
You know.
Yeah.
But definitely, if you have not checked it out,
yeah,
check it out.
Yeah. I've been fiddling around a little bit, not totally focused on Space Marine, which is the new...
I hear it's really good.
The new 40K game from Relic, who has done a stand-up job with their 40K games up to date. Definitely taking things much, much further up the ladder than the really shitty days of putting out games like Fire Warrior and... all sorts of other really bad games you probably haven't heard of unless you're, you know, an embarrassing nerd. But I guess, have you seen like the videos and whatnot? Have you seen any of the game?
I've seen a little chainsaw sword action.
You've seen the best part of the game. It's, I mean, like, I like it. I definitely like it. I like the 40K universe.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, I get into the game, you know? But otherwise, it's a very shallow experience where it's this kind of second rate Gears of War kind of thing. Is more like even like a third rate. Like, you can't hide behind cover, and I mean, like, a lot of times you just really want to just like jump into the crowd of dudes and just start cutting them down with your chainsword, which is awesome, you know. The graphics are fantastic, you know. I mean, it's your Warhammer army come to life, and it looks really great, and the sound is just absolutely top notch. But if you're not really in the 40K, definitely stay away. But if you are, maybe wait for it to come down a little bit. It's a bit pricey for what it is, I think, as of now. But wait for that, like, down to $30 price drop, and you're going to have a really satisfying game ahead of you.
Awesome. One other thing on the video game tip real quick. Have you what's the story? Have you looked into Dead Island at all?
I just sort of
checked out the
yeah.
I checked out the trailers and stuff, and I was really disappointed actually by the trailers.
Hmm.
It looked.
Did you see that trailer? The whole thing is backwards.
Yeah,
that's cool.
I thought it was a cool idea, but the game didn't actually.
It didn't
show
you any of the game.
Cool.
You know?
Well, I mean, just
but
the
I mean,
whole
it's just
thing.
Like,
it's like
it picked my interest early on.
It
seeing
didn't,
it now when it's out, that's not going to be as cool.
See,
but
the thing
I mean,
is, it felt really heavy-handed. It felt really kind of like I've seen this before.
Yeah,
it wasn't. You know, like I was expecting. It was, you know, for a game that's supposed to be really groundbreaking and doing some really new stuff. The trailer was very like that. Trailer is.
It's my understanding that the game isn't that groundbreaking, though. I've heard it's kind
supposed
of like
to be like
Fallout 3.
Isn't? But it's supposed to be like a MMO. like kind of thing. Like it's like really? A persistent world RPG,
that's cool,
action though. RPG, where yeah. you're like kind of like running around with each other and the world's changing. Yeah. I mean, it's sort of confusing. I'm not fully understanding everything, but I definitely, it's on my radar.
Yeah.
It's something that I really am interested
my interest,
in.
Definitely,
and,
I very rarely will pay full price for a game, you know. So.
Especially now since I don't get to play anything anyway.
Yeah,
so.
Right.
Or I play things very, you know, I'm very late with
yeah,
a lot of stuff.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
Let's move on to movies.
We've seen some good movies.
We've definitely seen some. I mean, we saw one.
I saw one
really good movie. So let's start with the movie that we both saw, and I think
we're both
at least
say,
I really really enjoyed.
I absolutely loved it.
Yeah. So that's Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Yep.
And I think it was fucking fantastic.
I think it was the best movie I saw all summer, and I saw all the major movies with the exception of Super 8. I was not able to get out to the theater
in
time for
that. Which is
terrible
because that's the that's I think the best movie.
Okay, well then that's the one I got waiting for.
It's tough to say. I mean, it's tough to say because
yeah.
Rise of the Planet of the Apes is really I think in my opinion exactly like it's a return to form. I
yes.
think for sci-fi.
Yes.
For sci-fi
yes.
movies.
I that's think what I thought. I thought this is a real science fiction movie.
Yeah.
Not that kind of thing where it's like, well, it's in space, so therefore it's science
yeah,
fiction.
Yeah, it's some bullshit
like Star
in space.
Wars, you know,
yeah.
like Star Wars. It's not. It's that's fantasy. It's a fantasy movie in space.
Yeah,
this
yeah.
is real science fiction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little harder sci-fi,
yep.
if you want to use the you know, more
yeah.
novelistic
yep.
parlance.
Yep. It's a believable concept.
Yeah. It's got the, you know, it's, and it also has the somewhat heavy-handed message, which I think was
but
a big, no, which is good. I mean, which
key
is fine.
In the original series.
It's key in the original series. Also key, I think, in classic sci-fi.
Yeah,
is
absolutely.
That, you know,
yep.
classic sci-fi was really written in most cases as parables to,
they're
you
like
know,
cautionary tales.
Yeah,
you
exactly,
know?
Exactly. There was a lot of social commentary
yeah.
associated with sci-fi.
Yep. And this definitely it, you know, lives up to that.
I think it's still, I think there still is to some degree, but I mean,
yeah.
definitely if you're looking at classic era sci-fi,
yeah.
like writing,
yeah.
all, you know, all the giants, I think, were saying something about, you know, definitely had that
right.
heavier, you know, using
yeah.
the sort of robots and space and all this as a way to explore
yeah.
the sort of darker side and the darker direction that
mm-hmm.
humanity might take, things
yeah.
like that. You know, and I think this does a
certainly
really
lives
good
up
job
to
it,
it without even taking it into space or anything like that. I mean, it's just like it's here.
Yeah, it's here.
It's
now.
Here,
it's
and
great.
You know, it's like the reason why the apes become intelligent is a very possible thing that, you know, we
yeah.
could be exploring already. We are exploring already.
Yeah,
you know,
well,
I don't want to spoil things too much.
I have a friend whose father works for the company that cracked the human genome.
Yeah, right.
And he's, you know, basically said that, like, you know, he's like, listen, we're absolutely doing illegal human cloning experiments. Like,
yeah.
that's absolutely a thing that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So science is up to some fucked up stuff.
Yeah.
Like, there's,
yeah.
there's no doubt that these things are going on and that it's
yep.
just, you know, there's some lab somewhere full of, like, fucking, you know, monkey babies in jars
yeah.
that are, you know, just waiting to wake up and eat us.
Let's talk about Conan. I haven't seen Conan, but I'm certainly intrigued to hear what you have to say about it because I love Conan.
So I'm going to say that it was not bad. It was
okay.
It wasn't great, but it wasn't bad. I really enjoyed it. I walked out feeling satisfied. There were definitely a couple parts where it was like, are you fucking serious that you allowed this to happen? Like, what the fuck? You know, like, what are you thinking? Especially Rose McGowan's character, just her
well,
whole thing.
I knew
thing,
that was going to suck.
Whole
just
thing
look at
was just,
her.
Yeah,
looks,
her whole thing was just
awful.
Basically nonsense.
Yeah.
But I will say, like, Jason Momoa.
Yeah.
He is Conan.
Nice.
I mean, honestly, like, I grew up, you know, I'm young enough that I grew up with Arnold Schwarzenegger basically being Conan. I mean, it's really,
yeah.
I think, the first depiction of Conan I really saw. You know,
right.
So when I was reading the books
that
and stuff.
That defined your
I read the
of Conan.
Yeah, I read the
yeah.
books later.
Yeah.
So when I was reading them, I sort of envisioned
Arnold Schwarzenegger,
yeah. you know, in the books. I'm going to say that after more recently rereading, you know, Conan stories not that long ago,
yeah.
that Jason Momoa is more Conan than Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
Arnold yeah. Schwarzenegger is fucking phenomenal. And, you know, the original Conan the Barbarian is light years better.
Mm-hmm.
But that Jason Momoa, I think, does an incredible job, especially in this sort of shitty script and some shitty situations that he has to put
yeah,
himself in,
right.
of really embodying the kind of lust for life
yeah.
and sort of just kind of...
And I didn't really get that from Arnold.
Mirthiness,
yeah, right.
I guess, if you will. Yep. That he is just, you know, he's living, you know, like he's a hard-ass dude that murders the fuck out of people.
Yep.
But he also gets drunk as fuck and likes to party and like, yep. you know, and like he just, you know, he takes great joy. He relishes battle. You know, he wants to charge in headfirst, you know, sword swinging, like whatever, you know, like just fuck it, you know? Like, I mean, that speech to Crom in original Conan Barbarian is the closest, I think, that Arnold comes to really embodying the Conan spirit.
Yeah.
And I think that Jason Momoa embodies that just in his countenance. You know, he smiles. You know, there's scenes where he's, like, smiling when he's, like, cutting dudes' heads off and stuff. And it's not smiling in this, like, sadistic, creepy way. It's very well done. You know, I think he did a fabulous job.
I heard Arnold's a fan of it, actually.
That's good. Yeah. I really think that it's being held to a very high expectation,
right?
Because I think the storytelling of Conan the Barbarian, I think the direction of the original Conan the Barbarian is really top notch. I mean, it's really exemplary filmmaking. You know, soundtrack. The soundtrack to that movie
is still,
I think, other than maybe some John Williams and Howard Shore stuff,
it's one of the best soundtracks.
It's easily
one of
the best soundtracks ever done for film. I mean, and you know, so you're being held up against a really high standard.
Yeah.
If you're looking at sort of like genre fantasy, I mean, Conan the Barbarian is really, you know, like Robert E. Howard's Conan is a really towering figure. I mean, and then you look at the comics and you look at the art and you look at stuff that's been done. I mean, there's a huge body of work that is in many ways the sort of pinnacle of, you know, sort of like fantasy work.
That's what shaped fantasy for me. I got into Conan long before I ever got into Lord of the Rings.
I got into Lord of the Rings first, but I think, you know, it's Conan and Lord of the Rings.
I read Conan when I was like 10. Like, my dad gave me all of his Conan books.
Yeah.
Which 10, by the way, is the ideal age to get into Conan the Barbarian. It's everything a 10-year-old wants. By normal parent standards, you don't want it. But I mean, like, by the same time, I'm 10 years old. I want blood. I want sex. I want all that stuff.
Yeah.
And Conan delivered the goods.
Yeah. You were reading.
I was reading, exactly. So get the fuck out of my face.
But it's the same thing. Like, you're not going to shit talk like Lord of the Rings for, you know, whatever. I mean, these are towering things. You know, there's such a huge body of work. I mean, it's the same way that, like, I can look at the Hobbit cartoon from the 70s. I love it. I absolutely love it. I mean, I think it's one of the...
We're going to disagree on that.
I absolutely love it. But I also know that objectively it's really not that great. You know, but I absolutely love it. And
it's an all-you-can-eat buffet of shit.
Oh, God. I'm top 10
Somebody
movies.
Said...
Top 10 movies of
Matt
all time
Loader's
is...
Here.
Is
Wheel
the
in
Hobbit.
The catering order of shit.
The Hobbit.
Here's the Hobbit movie for
The
him.
Hobbit is so
Have
good.
Have fun, Matt.
It
Loader.
Also helps that I think Bilbo looks like my grandmother. But I think that this does...
I've met your grandmother.
Yeah, she kind of does, right? But I think it does a really great job of really capturing, I think, what Conan is about. I mean, there's just, you know, there's naked ladies and dudes getting cut up and, you know, crazy stuff happening and him doing all kinds of over-the-top ridiculous things and, you know, just fighting and charging in and not really thinking. You know, I mean, I think that's the other thing, too.
Yeah.
I think, honestly, the overall story arc also does a good job of feeling like a classic Conan story where he's just kind of swept up into this shit and is just kind of like, well,
no,
you know what?
I
decided I need to fucking kill this guy, so I'm going to. You know,
Conan is not the deepest thing in the world. It's more of the visceral experience. You know?
And this is a very visceral movie.
Yeah.
And there's some cool little set pieces in terms of, you know, the action. The guy that plays the head villain, I was actually pleasantly surprised, is not as shitty and
is
one-dimensional.
Is it a made-up head villain, or is it
It's not a classic.
It's not like
sort
Gotham
of,
on or anything cool
no,
like that.
No, no. I'm trying to remember. You know, I mean, there's like an amalgamation kind of thing going on. I mean, there's elements of stuff from here and there, little nods and whatnot. But it's definitely not a, you know, like straight out of the pages of Howard kind of thing. You know?
Okay.
You know. But I mean, I just mean the acting, the story. You know, just he did a good job. You know, I mean,
it's a bit more faithful to that than the Arnold one was. to the writing of Rowdy Howard. Yeah, I mean,
Thulsa Doom is pretty serious, too, I think.
Yeah.
I think he was a pretty good Conan
villain. He's a great Conan villain.
I think he's a great Conan villain.
I agree.
But yeah, I mean, this is a dude, you know, he's kind of doing the magic. I mean, the story, you know, this kind of weird broken magic stuff and fighting the barbarians and this and that. And, you know, Ron Perlman does a great job as Conan's father, a little heavy-handed. But, you know, I mean, that's what you want. Like, heavy-handed ass, like, this is who you need. Yep. I mean, I think he does exactly what you expect him to and what, you know, I think is appropriate. So, yeah, I mean, it's not my favorite movie. It's not the greatest movie. Yeah. I still think the original Conan the Barbarian is a more enjoyable fantasy sword and sorcery experience. But, I mean, I'm going to get it when it comes out. You know, I mean, I was really pleasantly surprised by how much I enjoyed it. There was tons of stuff that I could nitpick as a nerd.
Yeah.
And there were definitely scenes that were terrible. Or not scenes, but definitely, you know, things that I was like, that were really terrible. But at the end of the day, I walked out of, you know, the end of the movie, I walked out of the theater and was like, that was actually pretty fucking awesome. I had a really good time. So.
Well, you like Conan. I like Transformers 3.
Hey.
You know?
It actually,
that's fair enough.
That's not even that terrible comparison in that sense. That it's very, it's a visceral, fun experience.
It's visceral fun. That's what I wanted.
Yeah.
Before you talk about Harry Potter, let me preface this with that for years, pretty much since Harry Potter first came out, from the time I first heard the name Harry Potter,
You're not saying it right. It's Harry Potter.
That's part of the reason why I shit-talked it, and that's what I'm getting to, is that I shit-talked Harry Potter for years for various different reasons. I wanted nothing to do with it, and that might have been kind of shitty of me. I just read The Hobbit again, and I ordered some books online. And while waiting for that, I got into my wife's library and started reading Harry Potter. And I'm eating some crow. And it's good fun.
But
at the same time, I know nothing about it.
Yeah, I'm going to keep it cool.
Okay. Saying. Spoiler-wise, keep it cool because now I'm actually interested. I've seen none of the movies and I've... Like, I'm like 20 pages away from finishing the first book.
Wow, you're really early in it. I actually have never read the books.
Yeah.
I've just seen the movies.
You've seen the movies. You've seen all of them, though?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I was going to talk about the final chapter.
Yep.
And I was a little disappointed, actually, because I think that I enjoyed the movies. I didn't think they were great, but I enjoyed them. I think they got, you know, they were good. But this sort of two-part splitting this last half did not feel very like an epic, the finish of an epic tale. It felt very like, so this is
not
happening.
Like Return of the King, where the Return of the King was like the ending itself was epic,
it's like
because
the
there
fucking
were like
end
fucking
of the world.
Five of them.
Yeah. It's like the fucking end of the world and shit is just going wild. And like, it does not feel like that. It doesn't feel near epic enough. Like the battles and crazy set pieces and stuff in some of the earlier movies actually felt
more serious
epic and more serious. Yeah. And especially the first part of the last one, you know, it's like the Deathly Hallows part one was more, I think, exciting than this last one. I mean, the last one did a decent job wrapping it up, but it was really, I walked out feeling like very underwhelmed.
Mm.
I mean, I knew what was going to happen because, you know, my wife enjoyed the books a lot, and you know, so she read them and you know, kind of told me the story because I'd you know, followed and seen the movies and this and that. And I knew that there was no way I was going to not get it spoiled, You've managed to like avoid it just because you didn't care for so long.
Everyone knows
that no one's really talking about it anymore.
Don't talk to Josh about Harry Potter, else he'll rip your face off.
But it was really disappointing.
Hmm.
It wasn't terrible, but it was just not disappointing. I guess maybe I went in with too high hopes that it was going to be this epic thing.
Right.
But, I mean, it didn't even feel like Return of the Jedi. You know, I mean, it was not... Oof. Yeah, I mean, it was not... I like Return of the Jedi, but I mean, even that, you know, I mean, there was no, like, big... their final battle...
Someday we'll just have an episode where we just argue movies, because I know there's some that we disagree on.
There are. But, like, the final battle, for example, like... I mean, I think it's pretty reasonable to guess that there's going to be a final battle.
Yeah, you're not spoiling anything for me on that.
So, like, the final battle is, like, really not impressive. Like, I mean, in the book I hear it's good. I mean, in the book it's, you know, whatever. But, like, you know, watching two wizards fight in other movies...
Should be cooler than...
In other Harry Potter movies. In other Harry Potter movies, they do a much better job of, like, making wizards fighting with each other exciting. Like, this was really, like... Really? That's this fucking guy? Like, this has been a problem for this long? Really, Harry? Like, step up to the plate, dude. Like, come on. Like, what the fuck? And there were definitely a number of moments, too, where, I mean, I don't know if this is a problem with the original story or a problem with just the movie, but there were a number of instances where it was kind of like, you know what, common sense would dictate that you not be a fucking dumbass and you take care of this in an appropriate way.
I would, like, from where I'm at in the series of books, I might blame that on the books. Like, I'm enjoying the books, but, I mean, there's some seriously flaws in the logic. Why have seven people play this stupid-ass sport, and you've only got one guy searching for the thing that'll end the game in your favor? What's up with that? Use the other six fucking dudes to find the snitch. Don't be a douche. Just do it.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's a thing. All right. Maybe you want to go coach...
I think I'm on to something
maybe
here.
Maybe you want to go coach the Quidditch team.
Yeah, today's lesson, don't be a douche. They have, just find the snitch.
You know they have fucking Quidditch teams at, like, you know, really pretentious colleges? Yeah, they do. I mean, they don't actually... I assume they don't fly around on brooms. But, you know... I've seen pictures.
You would
some
assume.
Bullshit. I'm guessing. I don't know. These rich motherfuckers at the Ivy Leagues. I live in New Haven.
Riding around with a vacuum cleaner.
Yeah, listen.
I built this thing out of a vacuum cleaner. You know how you used to get, like, the ads, like, in comic, like, old 90s comic books? Like, oh, you could build this floating chair by using a vacuum cleaner motor.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I have a friend that actually did it.
Nice. Really? Yeah. Did it float?
Yeah, he built a little hovercraft.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous.
Nice.
Yeah. So, Rex. So, Dune, one of my favorite games. Twilight Imperium, my other favorite game. Rex would seem to be a match made in heaven. However, I am not really enthused.
Really? Well, I mean, okay. I don't own Dune, but I really like Dune. I probably won't own Dune.
I think that the Dune theme is way better than Twilight Imperium. As you know, I'm a huge fan of the novels.
Yeah.
So... for me, I'm going to buy it.
It is missing, I think, one of the key things that I liked about Dune. When I played Dune, the time that I played it, I was immediately taken with just how well it fit the theme. There's very few games that nail its theme as much as that.
I think it is important to point out to all the, like, you know, venom-spewing nerds out there that say Dune is completely inseparable from its theme. That Dune originally designed Roman legion-ass game.
Yeah, that's...
You know, so I don't think...
It is separable
from its theme.
Idiots.
I just personally prefer the Dune theme to the Twilight
Imperium.
I think the Dune world is better. However, I will say that reading the fluff that they have done on it, I am pleasantly surprised by how good a job I think they did with it.
What you need to look at is that the Twilight Imperium races... Read the fluff from all the Twilight Imperium races. None of them are what you would call original concepts, and some of them, I would argue, are supposed to be Dune houses, or at least inspired by Dune houses. I mean, there's the obvious ones, you know, there's the ones that's like, oh, these are obviously the Borg, you know? But I think the
Bene Gesserit.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that there's a race in Twilight Imperium that fits that description
extremely
well.
Reading the race... matchups for which race is which sort of house or faction. Because
I think they did a great job with
Space
matching
and
it up.
And the Bene Gesserit are not houses. Yep. So get your nomenclature together here.
Yeah.
Also the Fremen are not.
They're not houses. Really a house
only, there's only really three houses involved in Dune.
Yep.
And three other factions.
Factions. You can say factions.
Factions, yeah. So, but, I mean, I think they did a good job of picking who's who. I mean, I like what they did with the Sandstorm. Being, you know, like Federation of Soul orbital bombardments. And that's why Federation of Soul takes less casualties because they know, they sort of can hear on the radio chatter.
Right. They know to get the fuck out.
Yeah, exactly. So they don't have to worry, you know, the same way that the Fremen have to worry about the Sandstorm. I mean, I think they did a really interesting job from what I've seen of, you know, integrating it as best they could and dealing with sort of like a shitty situation. Because I think, you know, unequivocally, they would have much rather put it out.
Without question.
Dune.
Yeah.
You know, I'm interested to see, you know, there's talk of some other slight variants and things that can be involved. So I'm interested to see what exactly is
going on. So long as they don't
there.
Give it too much of the traditional Fantasy Flight treatment in which they take something that was fine and...
Well, I don't think that's true, really, because
I think they do it more often than not.
What reprints have they fucked up that horribly? They did a great
First
job with
foremost,
Cosmic. They did a great job with Arkham. They did a great job with Warrior Knights. They did a great job with the Dracula, Fury
of
Dracula.
Fury of Dracula, I think that the GW version, the Games Workshop version, is marginally better.
But it's close. I mean, I don't think
they
fucked it up. I don't think they fucked
it up. No. And they still kept the combat system as...
As fucked up as
it is. As fucked up as it is. I mean, it is it's definitely the weak point in the game.
So what have they redone that they did such a horrible job in then?
Oh, my God. Dungeon Quest.
Dungeon Quest, okay.
Dungeon Quest remake is abominable.
I mean, I guess you're talking more recently. Because, I mean, I think historically, they've done a really good job of doing...
I'm not the biggest Talisman fan in the world, but I actually like what they did with Talisman.
I think they did a great job with Talisman.
Yeah, I like the reroll thing being used as, like, you know, it's kind of like a currency. It's cool.
I think they did a great job with Talisman. Yep. And the expansion they've done, like, the Reaper is awesome.
Yeah, I agree.
The Reaper is great.
I agree.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm very hopeful that...
It's just that their recent trends with, like, you know, really less... Well, then again, you know, there are no dice in Dune. So I guess it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they're, you know...
I like the combat wheels. That's what I'm saying, though. I don't know if they are.
I think the big thing is going to be if they make a lot of these changes optional versus not optional. You know what I mean?
Right. If you want to really do a totally different experience, that's fine.
Because I think that's kind of what they did with Cosmic Encounter. Stuff that you can kind of, you know, you don't have to play with flares.
No.
You know what I mean? But I mean, you kind of really have to play with flares.
But the flares are awesome.
But it's just very modular. I mean, I think Dune is awesome.
Oh, man. That was for Ken.
I think... So, we are here with Kurt and Justin from Smirk and Dagger Games.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
They are well known for putting out some awesome Fuck Your Buddy games. You can find them in all good Spencer's gifts.
We don't literally.
In that back section next to the bags, you know, they're like, you know, the Naked Man for Grandma bags, you know.
Actually, and then the Smirk and Dagger section.
That's actually correct. I don't. Do you know?
No, I did not know.
Seriously.
Yeah, we actually were for sale at Spencer's. Hex was. They bought it because they thought it was a really cool tarot deck. And
they put it back. It was right next to the Ritual Daggers. And
and no one bought it because it's not a Terra deck, so...
it was in between the personal massagers and the over-the-hill, you know, rear-view mirror on the bottom of the cane.
How many people you think walked in, though, you know, and they're checking out the newest shipment of Ritual Daggers and whatnot, and they walk by, oh, Hex.
A decent number... did so, especially when they finally put it on sale.
Nice.
It wasn't being sold as a tarot deck, obviously. Yeah. But I tell you what, the fact that that happened ended up probably saving the company because Hex, when it was first launched, it was our very first product, and we didn't have distribution for 6 months of that product where it sat in a warehouse costing us money. And so we sold half the print run to Spencer's. And
so you guys kind of jumped into this whole publishing games thing.
Blindly.
Pretty buck wild. Huh? So I guess that knocks one question out of the way, right? Yeah. That, you know. But no, I mean, really, how did you get into, you know, I mean, what do you were just, you know, gamers and said, hey, like, we can do this. We have ideas, you know, like, let's do it ourselves.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I've always been, you know, a pretty avid gamer. And I credit Tom Jolly's Wiz War with kind of being the impetus for what my company has become, because that was just one of my favorite games ever, just because it was so just like crazy and nasty, and you know, you're sealing people behind walls, and it was just it made me laugh. That's what I love to make. So when I started to think, well, geez, you know, maybe I'll create games of my own, because I would do like little mini expansions for other people's games just for, you know, for us. And and that was all well and good. And then someone said, well, why don't you try to make your own games? The first games I made, they blew ass. They were horrible. and the reason...
Listen, I'm going to go on the record that the Fortress of Ameritrash does not always think blowing ass is a bad thing.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. Yep.
These were like playing solitaire against yourself. Well, of course, that's solitaire. Yeah. But it was like four people sitting at a table playing solitaire. And there was like just no interaction. It was horrible.
But very nice sculpy figures.
So one of the top, I would say, like pretty consistently Ameritrash sort of game publishers out today started out making Euro games. Is really basically what you're saying.
Well, no,
they were probably more thematic than Euro games, though. I mean, if you were like from you know Wiz War.
Yeah, I mean, we had a game. It was
you had
like,
the right inspiration.
It was called like Mad Impulse, and it was all like, you know, psychological. You know, you were playing ids, different aspects of personalities. So thematically, it was an interesting idea, but it was just, you know, it was boring as crap. So what I ended up doing was I ended up pulling back and saying, listen, what kind of game... Let's just assume for the moment that I actually do this and I became a game company. What would I want to stand for? During my day, I'm a marketer. So building a brand is, kind of what I do all day long. So I was like, well, I love stab your friend in the back games. So why wouldn't I just, plant a flag and say, that's what we're going to do? And just putting that thought in my head, I gave it a shot and, said, all right, what's the simplest, easiest game I could think of that is just all about lots of player interaction and lots of, F you across the table? And Hexex was born in literally a week and a half, 2 weeks. And it went through a lot of different iterations. We play tested that like crazy and changed it a lot.
Yeah.
But essentially, it's still the game that got created in a very short time. So,
that's awesome. That's
yeah.
Awesome. I had a question and forgot it immediately.
That's because you haven't had enough tequila yet.
You should have
more of that.
I'm a better interviewer the drunker I am, I think. But,
this is really awesome tequila,
by the
way.
This is really high-quality stuff we got here at the FatCast.
Like I said, it gets the job done. First and foremost.
I don't know if smooth is the word I would use at all.
It's antiseptic.
For those of you that can't see our sweet El Jimador, I don't know. I don't really know anything about tequila. I buy cheap tequila myself as a, not money haver. That was really, really descriptive.
Not money haver. I like that.
Yeah, exactly. So, moving on from there, I think everybody knows you guys the most for Cutthroat Caverns.
Yeah.
I would say that's probably I don't know, maybe it's just my perception, but I would imagine that's sort of your marquee title at this point.
Yeah, that's clearly the flagship, yeah.
And I don't know if you can remember that I play tested that when it first came out, before you were still, and I remember thinking this is pretty cool, this could go places, and then it refined even more, and then when it actually came out, it was just awesome. So I think we as the fort can all say that it is definitely, I think up there in terms of classics and doing great stuff. So, what was it exactly that you were kind of trying to? And now that I've blown you enough, what was it? What was it? I mean, what made you want to do it that way? I mean, where did you get the idea for it? Because it's such a sort of unique take on. It's so simple, but it's such a I think really interesting and compelling way to approach the dungeon crawl.
Well, I think the answer is that, first of all, both Justin and I are longtime D&D guys. We haven't played in a long damn time, but that's part of who we are as gamers in our past. And so I did want to do something that was kind of a dungeon crawl nature game, but I didn't want to do a game that, quite honestly, had been done before. And that's the most populated genre there is in our hobby. So
that impressing princes. Moving furniture, maybe.
Yes, that might be untouched so far. But so, honestly, what I remember most as a young impressionable role player was, when we started, it was all about the Lord of the Rings kind of, we're going to help each other. If we find a magic sword, who's best to take this sword? Yes. I can't even talk now. This is really great tequila.
It's a smooth tequila.
But in any case, at some point, someone said, oh, wait, look at this thing in the DM's manual. We can change alignments and stuff. And so someone approaches the DM and says, hey, listen, I want to be an evil character. Let's not tell anyone. And then all of a sudden there's this horrific moment where you realize that the people who are supposed to be helping you are worse than the monsters facing you. And you're what the hell's going on? The world melts and there's this just awful terror and oh my God, I wanted that feeling to be started and maintained throughout the entire game. That was the core inspiration for the game. And then it was just trying to find mechanics that made it work. So it became about kill stealing. It became about, what am I going to do to you just to make sure that I can, get my shot in. I didn't want it to really devolve necessarily into we're hacking each other, because that's, not quite it won't maintain the tension throughout. And if everyone is kind of backstabbing, but doing so situationally, then that was kind of a rich area to jump into. The other thing was, from the outset, I said, no dice, no attack matrix, you know, nothing like that. Nothing that had been, you know, done in every single game I've ever seen for Dungeons. So the card deck where you choose to, you know, how hard you're going to swing each turn, you know, the randomness is what cards you have available. But other than that, you're making that decision. So
you guys have expanded it pretty heavily, I think. Well, not heavily, not in like a... You're not Fantasy Flight every month putting out a new one, but
no.
But you've definitely sort of like built it up into a brand, and I know that you over time have sort of like expanded the definition of what the system could accomplish and what it could do. I mean, do you have any big plans for stuff that you know, that's similar to the adventure books? Is that what you call
yeah,
it?
Yeah, adventure module. Yeah.
Yeah, adventure module. Yeah. So do you have any big plans for stuff beyond that? Do you have any stuff that you know we should know about that's coming out?
Well, the biggest thing we wanted to build into the game was unique character abilities. That's been our challenge all along, is to make the game balanced and yet to have the characters feel that they themselves are unique, not just some generic Joe Schmo in a dungeon, but this is my character and this is what he can do. And that's why people go to role-playing games, is to have a character that you feel attached to. And we're really trying to bring that now to the game. It's been problematic because as you give a character unique abilities, you now make him... or her uniquely powerful. We didn't want to make it just, you know, if I pick these X, Y, and Z, I'm always going to win every time. And balancing it has been the, you know, the chief concern, that we keep, you know, an even gameplay. We don't want someone to run away with it, but we want them to feel that they have something, you know, uniquely to their play style. And we've been working on that for...
Since the beginning. Yeah. Actually, it was... Yeah. It was.
Well, I know I've play-tested versions of,
yes,
of
yes,
aspects
have.
Of that.
Yeah, and that's why Fresh Meat's been on the table so long that other expansions went ahead of it, because that's been... Honestly, it's my fault. It's my fault because this is a debate that Justin and I had at the core inception of the game. And he really recognized that people want to have unique characters. My fear... was that the balance wouldn't be right, and someone would say, I'm not playing if I'm not the dwarf. So I actually dragged my heels probably the hardest and longest, because I wanted it to be about the players. What nasty, insidious things are you going to do, regardless of what powers you have? What are you going to do that's going to advantage you? So,
That's weird. I actually, the first and only time that I was ever able to play it, that I kind of saw both sides of that.
Yeah.
I was kind of like, you know, it's kind of like an expectation going into it because it's a dungeon crawl.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of was like, well, I would kind of want this character that's different and does different stuff from everybody else. But at the same time, I'm like, but then it would kind of mess it all up, you know? And then it was, you know, it's kind of like, well, it probably detracts from what I'm actually doing, you know? And that's kind of the satisfaction.
Yeah.
You know, when I play it.
What I think I love about it a lot and this goes for other games that I really like, is that there's enough system and game there that it feels like you're playing, you know, like a meaty game,
mm-hmm.
but the real game is all happening sort of above the table.
Right.
It really,
yeah.
The metagame is really what makes it happen, and all of the rules that are there and are meaty and you can kind of get into and mess around with all step out of the way though. And you know, and the sort of the crux of it, you know, I mean, I think it's something like, I mean, probably my favorite games, Twilight Imperium and Dune. There's a lot of rules there, but once you get the rules down and the mechanics stuff down, the real game is, you know,
not
talking
in the
to
rules.
You know,
yeah.
is not in the rules, is all yeah. that stuff, and that it yeah. does such a really great job of allowing the players to really control the experience that they're having, you know.
And actually, that's, you said control the experience they're having, and I think that's one of the things that kind of separates our games from, you know, other games out there. I don't think any of our games are games that you can necessarily truly outgame the game. It's not like it's a logic puzzle that if you do right, you are going to win.
Mm.
Most of our games are really more about trying to elicit an emotional reaction and trying to get players to interact. And it's more about that experience. It's more a game experience than it is you're playing against the game and I'm gonna outgame you. So I think that's pretty valid.
So for, I know that, you know, so I had mentioned that Cutthroat Caverns, I think, sort of the marquee brand. I mean, if, just to give everybody sort of a rundown, like, what else, you don't have, like, a ton of games out. So, I mean, what other stuff do you have, you know, I mean, just for people that may have heard of Cutthroat Caverns, but have not necessarily, you know, checked out the full catalog, if you will.
Sure. Well, let's see. We've got, Hexex was our very first game, and that is now out as Hexex XL, which we took the core game and we had one expansion for it. We fused it and made of a best of all in one box, and then at the same time we ended up with two new play variants with new bits and pieces in the box as well. And it's now just the one core game, and it probably won't go anywhere beyond that. I think that's kind of its final form now. Then we came out with the Dead Hand Chaos Poker, which essentially is like a standard poker deck, but it's kind of got a there's a dead hand mechanic in it. So at, you know, play any game that you'd like, and at, just as the winner's about to claim the chips, there's a chance that through a draw of a card, one of the hands of the table may now be dead. If it's the winner's hand, then the next ranked hand player wins.
It's like being in the Wild West playing poker, and you may win the chips, but someone may actually shoot you before you pull it.
Before you climb up. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's good.
That's nice. You know, I like... that should have been actually in the rules. I like that. So then... Run for Your Life Candyman, which is our twisted parody of Candyland, which, quite honestly...
That was a good game gone bad. That was your idea, too. He was just going to do a sort of a online, find an appropriate game, and here's some cool alternate rules for it. And it evolved from there.
Yeah, we weren't even going to sell it. It was just like, it was a joke. I thought it was very funny to take the sweetest game in the world and just turn it upside down, and it's the seedy side, and you've got cartoon cookie violence smashing each other apart and ripping people's limbs off. And I thought it was great fun, but I figured no one's going to pay for that. So I figured maybe I would just load the rules and like the playing pieces online, and it'd be like a benefit to coming to visit our site. We took it to the Gamma Trade Show, and retailers and distributors saw it for the first time. It was just black and white. And everyone was coming up, was like, what have you done? No, listen, full color, any price you want in the box, we will sell the crap out of this. And so far they've been right. Yeah. So
that's good, that's good.
It's, yeah. it's in its second edition now.
Yep. Which the second edition has some juicier bits and some added cards and a quicker playing time. And that will be out October, so...
Awesome, awesome.
Other stuff in our...
Well, the spiritual successor is Shooting Ladders.
Shooting Ladders Fragfest, so...
The cookies have escaped the candy kingdom and now have battle-hardened and gone on to a full-on combat.
Yeah, it's like playing Halo on the Shoots and Ladders board. So it's got seven scenarios in the box. You can do, flag capture, sniper run, team plays... free-for-all, it's cookie weaponry and blowing the limbs off of cookies, so it's a big brother of Candyman.
And the Cutthroat line.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good. I mean, and so, just to clarify, too, like, you design everything that you publish.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you, unlike a lot of people, I mean, what made you, as a designer, say, hey, you know, I have these ideas... I'm going to publish everything versus, like, let me try to shop it around, let me show it to, you know, whoever and see if they'll do it. Like, what made you want to take the jump into actually being responsible for all of, like, the production of the physical, you know, copy?
The answer to that is partly why I do it. Like I said, I'm a creative director at a marketing company during the day, so I've answered a client's, you know, all the time. And so I never have a vision that's kind of uniquely my own. One of the nice things about doing it this way is that we really control what it is we're putting out there. It's our vision and, you know, sink or swim, it's our stuff. So it's really why I'm doing it. You know, it's the same reason why we don't necessarily, you know, take in other people's designs, because I didn't start it because I wanted to have a game company. I started it because I had a passion for gaming and I wanted to bring new and unique stuff that was my own vision out into the world. And so And if you licensed your game to another company, they're gonna change it and they're gonna adapt it, and they should be able to because it's their money on the line. But here it's just us.
That's not to say we haven't shopped stuff around.
That's true.
And we.
Well, I was going to ask about something that I love, and I don't know if you're even allowed to talk about. I don't know what the current status is, if there's any contractual stuff happening. The Ninja Star throwing Pokemon TV show-ish game.
Well, the truth is that...
Because I love that. I want to see that in production.
Well, okay, so... so, to more broadly answer that question, what Justin was hinting at was...
Well, actually, first, say what it is, I guess, if you can.
Well, I'm taking a step back before I dive in.
All right.
There are a lot of games that don't necessarily fit underneath our smirky banner. But we also have a lot of really interesting ideas for different types of games that, we've been trying to, license out to other people. You know, so folks like Hasbro and Fundex and Playroom, we haven't actually, signed anything other than our Crayola product, which we actually did 3D outdoor chalk.
I was going to talk to you about that after.
Yeah, okay.
Your real claim to claim.
Yeah, we did.
I love that stuff.
Thank you. So we pitch ideas that we would not produce ourselves to other companies. And the one that you were just talking about was a design that we shared with a couple different companies, and in some cases got a little bit down the road with in its various iterations, but the most recent was a Ninja Star throwing game with kind of anime type characters, and right now that one is still on the shelf, still being kind of considered and toyed with. It may in fact be more than we can actually handle ourselves as our very small indie company. But I think we still have a lot of hope for that.
It's damn fun.
Oh, thank you. Yeah,
so I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. So I think we've got a couple other folks that we'd like to show it to. And we're just going to see where it takes us.
Awesome. So moving back to the 3D chalk for a second.
Yeah.
So didn't you win the toy designer, or you were up for toy designer of the year or something?
Well,
or did you win?
There was two things. One of them was outdoor toy of the year, which it did win.
Yes. Uh-huh.
For Crayola. Crayola won the Outdoor Toy of the Year for it.
Crayola, no. You won.
Well, it was their product.
Yeah. But we all know who actually won.
and to be honest, they were really, really gracious about it, and they actually gave us a copy of the award. They ordered a copy of the award
for us.
Mm. Through the Toy Fair is the big toy show every year in Manhattan. Yeah. And that's where it actually won that award. The other one is that we had been nominated as kind of like the young inventor of the year. And this is, again, for like the mainstream market, not for the hobby market. Yeah. And it was based on that product and the fact that we'd been out there pitching hard. And
we were up against Bakugan or something. Oh, you were up against something ridiculous.
The dice rolling game. It was.
But Crayola was up against things like in its own category. Bakugan won that toy of the year in their category for boys, but we were up against some other really great independent designers. The two women who won, they deserved to win. They'd produced like 12 different really amazing titles.
Really nice stuff.
Yeah. Now we're friendly, so we hang out and we see them. So,
how did you get into designing chalk? You were just sitting around one day and were like, it'd be pretty crazy. What if this chalk was 3D?
We were at a show, industry show, and we ended up having cocktails with some guys from Crayola, and actually some other guys that knew them introduced us and said, you got to talk to these guys, they're really great. And they started talking us up to the Crayola guys, who then said, hey, you know what? We would love to get into games. Crayola mostly does activities, but we would love to bring games to our line. And it was this guy's vision. Mm-hmm. He was the outdoor...
And so you gave him chalk, because that's clearly a game.
No, not originally.
No, he wanted a proprietary game for Crayola that they could sell and play with big, fun outdoor pieces. He envisioned something that kids could play in the driveway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we brought them several games. We brought them a
12.
Game. Was it 12?
It wow. was 12 games over a year that we gave.
I want to play these games. I bet they're fun. Yeah.
And they looked at it and they said, this is wonderful. We love this. But what if? And then we came back next month and they said, oh, my God, this is so awesome. But what if? And then we'd come back next month. And they just kept kind of pulling us along until it turned out they didn't really want a game. They wanted an activity. But they led us to, they said, what if we did something 3D? And Kurt, you know, the sidewalk chalk artist Julian Beaver, have you ever seen his stuff where he does that amazing?
Yeah, yeah, the mm-hmm. stuff that looks 3D, yep. right?
It's perspective.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So Kurt actually found some ways to take the Julian Beaver-esque method and apply it to, like, a cartoon character. Like, mm-hmm. You could take a property and, you know, give it to a kid, but it was just way too, a kid would need a parent with them, and it would be a whole day project. And if a kid's playing, you know, kids, the kid would lose interest. But we did show it to Crayola. And then Kurt said, you know, right in the middle of the board meeting, but that's not what you want. And he kind of put it aside and he pulled out the glasses. And
so this is what you want.
It was a pretty amazing moment because they looked at it, and then one of the guys in the meeting just grabbed the glasses without saying anything and walked out the door.
It was the brand manager. And we're like, well, that didn't go well.
Yeah. He's gone. He just walked out of the meeting. And we're like, So he just keeps talking. The guy comes back 5 minutes later. Guys, get out of here. Come on. And he, like, pulls the whole meeting out into the parking lot. And he's like, look at this. And they had been, you know, testing some of their product in their parking lot right in front of their corporate office.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's putting the glasses on and he's stepping around going, oh, my God. And one by one, everyone's putting on these glasses and having the best time walking through the artwork.
The dude's out there like, this is like acid for kids.
So that's good. That's good. So Smirk and Dagger, acid for kids.
Yes.
Yep.
So that's...
Let those two things just be synonymous throughout history.
I'm going to put that on the box.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds so, good. Sounds fun. Really good. Real quick, I know you had a really, I don't know, Justin's probably really boring, so we don't need to talk to Justin about it, but I know you did something really, your job before whatever it is you're doing now was really cool. I don't know, the Hanna-Barbera stuff, right?
God.
You were like the manager of like Hanna-Barbera cartoons or something, right? Like something.
Well, you know what it was? Like no, it was nothing so glamorous. What it was?
I don't know. McGilly Gorilla. It does glamour is really what I think of.
Well, I tell you what. I went out to work in the film business right out of college and did that for a couple years. And you know, you can see my credits roll by in Friday the 13th Part 7 and some other stupid
nice.
Crap. Yeah,
Phantasm 2.
Yeah. But in any case. I was rolling around without direction for a long time because I decided I hated it, had to get out of the business. I couldn't go home because my parents, you know, without you know, direction for my career would be like, what is up with you? So I kind of hid in California for a while trying to figure out what I was going to do. I did a couple things. One, I was like a auditor of all things for the Disney Courier Company. And I did that for 2.5 years. And then someone gave me a call and said, hey, listen, Kurt, I just got a job over here at Hanna-Barbera. How would you like to be their first art librarian? I'm like, shut up. All right. So my first day, I walked in and literally, like, floor to rafters, boxes of cells, pencil drawings, you name it, photographs of all the art going back from Tom and Jerry through Scooby-Doo, through the latest thing they had done at that point. And it was just teams of art. And I was like, wow, okay. So I said, yeah, go organize it. They had never had an art library. They had like...
Fish third boxes.
It was just like, it was either in the warehouse or it was stuffed in the artist's drawers.
You want to play 52 pickup?
Yeah, exactly. So I started just flipping through stuff and it was like, you know, and I was geeking out because yeah, I was yeah. like, you know, who didn't love Scooby-Doo as a
Check
kid?
It out, it's the Herculoids.
Johnny Quest. Yeah, Hercules, yeah. Exactly.
Yep.
So I was, you know, I was just having a great time going through it. But the interesting thing was that in order for me to, like, do the job well, people would, like, come in. It was, like, a new creative department, and they were starting to do marketing materials, and they needed this art. And they'd say, okay, I need Fred Flintstone and some kind of a Christmas scene, and it'd be great if Dino was there. So I'd get requests like that all the time. So what I decided to do was I created a visual archiving system. Now, this is long before the days of even stock photos on CDs where you type in the keywords. And there was no Google. There was no, I mean, So I said with FileMaker Pro, why don't I attach keywords to all of these images so that I can just type in, you know, oh, Fred Flintstone Christmas, let's see. Oh, here, boop, 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 and I'd have all the images pop up. Well, what ended up happening was Turner Broadcasting, who shortly after I started working there bought the company, was going into CNN and needed a visual archiving system for all the footage. They had heard about my system, and they invited me to this, like, crazy, like, ultra-corporate symposium with, like, huge funded companies, you know, who focused on nothing but getting this kind of product out. And here I am with just, like, my little FileMaker Pro program. I was, like, I was completely outclassed, but it was nice to be invited. So. but yeah, no, it was really a cool job, which I really enjoyed. But yeah, then, you know, it was the earthquakes and the riots and my my first child on its way, and we said maybe we don't want to live here, you know, raise our child here. So we came back to New York,
beautiful Connecticut.
Yeah, well, New York first and then Connecticut. Yeah. No.
That's what, do you do anything exciting, Justin? I know you work with a friend of mine. You do, like, art stuff.
Oh, yeah, I work
right?
with Aaron. Sure.
Yeah, Aaron, yeah.
He's a good guy, yeah.
Yeah, he's all right. Yeah. He knows me. He can't be that good.
Yeah. But,
Do you think that, like, any of this stuff... Oh, no, go ahead.
I was going to say, I just remembered we were talking about Cutthroat and, you know, what's kind of coming in Cutthroat, and we talked about kind of unique characters, but we never really fully answered your question on what is coming. And I think in the next couple months, that's going to be much, much clearer. We've been, throughout the past number of years since this first came up, we've been trying to figure out how are we going to deliver it? Because clearly it's something that fans keep asking for. And I think right now where we're potentially landing is kind of almost like a pregame drafting system of abilities where you're essentially trading valuable life points for pretty powerful abilities.
That's cool.
So you're kind of setting your own fate. Yeah, you might get, you know, you load up with all these great abilities, but, you know, you may not be around long enough. So it's a kind of a delicate balance, which, again, is what the game is all about, is maintaining a balance. So, we'll see there. Oh, and then the other product we didn't mention was the new Sutaku game as well.
Oh, yeah.
So, which is our push-your-luck dice game, which you guys just tried out.
We did. It's awesome.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun with that.
It's one of those games I was saying to Kurt is like, you're not going to look at it and say, wow, this is my favorite game ever. This is so groundbreaking and amazing. But it's going to turn out to be one of the games you end up playing the most because quick, it's easy, it's, you know, super fun for the, you know, 15 minutes it takes. That it's just going to see the table all the time. You know, as much as I would love to say that I play Twilight Imperium, you know, a couple times a week, that's just not the case.
Yes.
So, well, you know.
and honestly, we designed it as a really approachable, quick filler game. It's the kind of game that, you know, while you're waiting for everyone to either finish a game or show up to the table, whether you have one person or 12 people, you can quickly jump in and for 15 minutes have a pretty enjoyable little game. Which, you know, and some people actually saw the game at Gen Con this year, and we've actually since slipped something else into the box, which you guys have kind of gotten a first peek at and have actually, you know, thrown a couple ideas towards. So,
you're welcome.
Yeah.
A little too late to get my name up in lights.
No, that is true, yeah. But yeah, so it's going to have a little bit more smirky a feel than when it was first shown out in Gen Con, and largely because we heard our fans saying, hey, you know what? We'd like a little bit more Smirk and Dagger in our Smirk and Dagger game. And so we definitely decided to accommodate them. We stopped the presses and worked crazy hard in the last month just trying to make sure that we could, you know, make people happy with it. So
I think that's awesome.
Mm. Like you say, tons of fun. And it's got lots of very satisfying dice, which is very important to
a
lot of us on the Fortress of Mare trash. So they are.
Well, the dice are, like, you know, they're oversized and they're hefty.
Well, you got to stack them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's important.
And the little tiny dice, I mean, we certainly tried it with, like, other types of dice, and just that nice big hefty die is just very satisfying to roll and to stack.
And custom Japanese brush art.
Yeah, it looks great.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, we actually...
Except Kurt didn't look up what anything means, so I'm convinced that at least one of them means, you know, like, fuck your mother or something. Something really awesome. That's some fan is going to look it up after it comes out and be like,
son of a bitch!
they're actually just the numbers 1 through 6, but we worked with a Japanese brush artist to actually create all the artwork for the box. She actually even like made sure that our translation was right, and because there are a couple different ways that you can express the idea of to stack, which is, you know, sutaku, we actually learned during Gen Con, someone came up and said, well, that's how it spells, maybe, in English, but really, if we were to really correctly pronounce it, it's more like sutaku.
Was this person wearing a big, crazy hat?
No, they're a businessman from Japan. And he said that there's four characters in the word, and one of the characters is a pause. He said that character indicates a pause.
Hmm. Oh. Yeah.
Hmm.
Japanese kind of fucked up, huh?
Yeah. Crazy.
That's quite a language.
I know.
A different word for everything.
Pauses. Yeah. So anyway, thank you guys for stopping by.
Thank you for having us.
Kurt and Justin from Smirk and Dagger. Definitely check out Cutthroat Caverns if you haven't.
Yeah, it's a must-own.
Everything else they've done is also fun. I will say not as good as Cutthroat. You know, I mean, I think Cutthroat is definitely, for me, the pinnacle, but I do enjoy everything else, so I mean, that's a pretty ringing endorsement. The new dice games
were a lot of fun.
Not Sudoku. Yeah. What's it called again?
Sutaku.
Yeah.
Sutaku.
Sutaku.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Sutaku is Sutaku. So I'm going to check that one out.
Play it.
I apologize to all our Japanese and Spanish language fans. But definitely check that out. It should be out. It's at the printers now.
At the printer now. Should be out by mid or end of October now.
Okay, awesome. Cool. So definitely in time for Christmas.
Yeah.
Pick this stuff up, be about it. And some new Cutthroat stuff to be announced.
On the horizon.
Relatively soon. The goal is to have that for next Gen Con.
Nice.
Awesome.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well.
You'll be playtesting it soon.
I hope so. That's why I feel bad. Like, I playtest your stuff, and then I come on and give you, like, a blowjob of an interview. People are going to start questioning my journalistic integrity here. That's why I have to be such a dick to everyone else.
All right, well, thanks, guys. Yeah, we really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. So thanks to Kurt and Justin from Smirk and Dagger for coming by, and...
I'd like to apologize for not cursing enough. I feel very mellow today. I feel really mellow.
Work is tiring you.
I know one guy that's going to be happy to hear that, if he's still listening.
Yeah, well, fuck him.
You kind of pissed me off, didn't you?
I don't even know who we're talking about. Oh, yeah, fuck that guy. No, yeah, really, fuck that guy.
I like that guy in real life.
If you think I'm talking about you, yeah, fuck you.
There's your cursing.
So, thanks for listening, everybody else.
Yeah, yeah. We should probably do a real outro.
That sounded real enough to me.
Al, do we have an outro somewhere in there?
You've been listening to FatCast. You can find us on the web at fortressat.com.
You know, it's like, no, they were like totally blown away by like Survive and Dixit and stuff like that. Yeah, so they like that stuff.
Dixit is fun.
Dixit's a fucking blast.
The ladies really enjoy the Dixit.
They do.